Chapter 27, Forest, 1946. The year was 1946, and the war was over. Near Forest, Mississippi, Donald Triplett's parents had found a perfect place for him. A middle-aged couple lived a few minutes from their home. They were farmers, hard-scrabble, salt-of-the-earth Americans who toiled every day to keep their two mouths fed. The small house in which they lived lacked electricity or phone, but with no children of their own, they seemed to have endless patience in dealing with Donald's peculiarities. He was 13 years old, and the wide expanse of farmland on which he could freely roam every day was liberating. His fascination with measuring things was put to use. The yardstick he always carried with him employed for every imaginable purpose. After walking back and forth, measuring row after row of crops, Donald learned to plow them instead, guiding a huge draft horse down and back again, turning the soil over for planting. Like the other children Connor had seen, Donald had a passion for collecting things. In the backwoods of Mississippi, there was no shortage of dead animals, insects, and other assorted creatures, their carcasses inevitably brought into the house for cataloging. The patient farmers steered Donald towards a small plot of land near the house and showed him how to bury them. A tiny wooden marker stood over one mound of dirt and read, John Snail, Lewis, born, date unknown. The date of death was inscribed as the day on which he located the creature. Dates held a particular fascination for Donald, and he had developed the remarkable ability to calculate the day of the week on which nearly any date, future or past, fell. In fact, the couple who were watching over him had enrolled him in a local one-room schoolhouse, and he was beginning to show remarkable improvement. His math skills, in some regards, were uncanny, but even his language skills began to blossom. He began to write letters home to his mother, incredible tokens of affection she would treasure for the rest of her life. Mary Triplett had continued her correspondence with Dr. Connor, and a year earlier, the psychiatrist had come to Mississippi for a visit. His interest in the long-term outlook for the children he had first begun to see years earlier was growing, perhaps specifically because of the arc Donald's life had taken. The development Donald exhibited on the farm, his growing abilities in school, his improvements in communication, any of them would have confounded a physician of that era. At that time, one of the hallmark traits of mental illness was deterioration. For many of the feeble-minded and, quote, imbeciles Connor's predecessors had seen and classified, a downward spiral of mental decay until death was all but inevitable. Mental disorders of the day were considered to be the eventual result of aging for some, though often starting at a much earlier stage of life than we are currently accustomed. Much like we might assume the dementia that accompanies Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease a feature of the elderly, the paralysis and insanity that filled the asylums of that day were thought to be the occasional outcome of unrestrained teenage indiscretions, a condition for which they had a name, adolescent schizophrenia. Donald seemed headed in the opposite direction. In contrast to the decline of other mental illnesses of the day, he had made progress, astonishing improvements in his ability to communicate with others. The inward-turned self was still there, but only in fragments. Connor's continuing communication with the parents of other children revealed a similar pattern. Some of them had shown improvement, not decline, but progress. Their deficiencies were, at worst, persistent, while some appeared to improve over time, the opposite of what anyone had come to expect of mental disorders. For anyone who had witnessed the slow, steady descent into madness and inevitable death many who suffered from mental illness in that era entailed, autism presented a cloud of unknowing. The ominous sensation that this was something new, something never seen before, was growing fast. A newspaper's 1946 full-page article called Making Sense of Children's Chatter attempted a pitiful reckoning of this new discovery. Quote, child psychiatrists at Johns Hopkins have found child nonsense makes sense. If your little boy tells you not to throw the dog off the balcony when there's no dog or balcony, don't worry. He's autistic and knows exactly what he's talking about. It was one of the first ever mentions of the label autistic outside medical journals, and clearly the author was struggling to grasp the idiosyncrasies of the syndrome. Regardless, word would spread that Connor had experience with diagnosing autistic children, and parents would find him. Asperger's Clinic saw a similar increase in traffic. The mothers and fathers with no internet or local awareness of the disorder would travel across the country by train or automobile to Baltimore or Vienna to try and make sense of what had happened to their child. These children had professional parents in perfect mental health, and heredity, though it was assumed to be the origin of nearly all other mental illness, made no sense as a possible source. The observation that many of the children were making progress, leading more productive, communicative lives than when they were first seen, was the cause of additional confusion. As the two psychiatrists saw more children flow through their doors, another characteristic became glaringly obvious. This one even more puzzling than all of the others. Nearly all of them were boys.